You're listening to Faces of Atlantic, a series hosted by Terry Ann Richards that gets real with the leaders, changemakers, and everyday doers shaping Atlantic Canada. Each conversation dives beyond titles to uncover the grit, growth, and human stories behind the work.
This is Faces of Atlantic, where we go beyond titles and talk about the real human side of leadership. I'm Terry Ann Richards, and today I am sitting down with Matt Thompson to uncover the story behind this specific leader. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Terry Ann. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. So happy to have you here. So I want to get right into it, and I want to ask, when I strip away the titles, the strategy, everything that if I looked you up on LinkedIn, I could see, who are you really?
Let's get right into it, eh? I could go down the route of titles, like I'm thinking like father, husband, those types of things, and I'll get to that. But I think more than anything, I'm somebody who tries to do the best I can. And sometimes I feel that's not good enough. Sometimes I fail. Sometimes I have to get back up. Sometimes I'm hard on myself. Sometimes the highs are glorious, and sometimes the lows are really hard. And that's applicable in fatherhood, in my relationship with my beautiful wife, in business, just in life, in my relationship with family, in everything. I'm also a cat dad of a couple cats, but this guy's just coming to say hi. He's saying, hi.
Hi, kitty.
Say hi. This is Neville. He's climbing up my body here, so I didn't want that. But yeah, I think that I am somebody who's still trying to figure himself out and somebody who's trying to make the most of this wonderful adventure.
I love it. So in your day-to-day world, in your organization, talk to me a little bit about what it is your company does, what it is your role is, you know, kind of paint that picture for those, again, who just may not know you yet, but they're going to get to know you by the end of this talk, what that looks like.
Well, so I'm co-founder and CEO at Placemaking 4G. So P4G is an organization. We just turned 8. I don't know when it's going to be out, but we just turned 8 early in October. And we started out as purely a recruitment organization, and then we evolved into a recruitment executive search organization. And then we evolved into a recruitment executive search and e-learning, organizational culture work, we think workshops, think facilitation, things along those lines. And ultimately, what we like to say is it, like, what sets us apart as an organization and the approach that we take is we really try to rehumanize the world of recruitment and not just chuck a resume at a wall to see what sticks, but really hold space for people to be seen and heard. And we help organizations rethink not only how they hire, but how they support their people once they're through the door. Atlantic Canada for years was, you know, hemorrhaging people. And then, you know, most recently, there's been a lot of influx of humans and, but also a lot of turnover. And there's a lot of support needed within that space. I mean, you know, a couple interesting factoids about us. We're certainly within like a niche market. We're a team of 9. So the team is about split between operations and, you know, delivery of recruitment and working with our clients. And then in the workshops, the education kind of space and the e-learning space. And the reason we got into workshops and education is because we recognized, so 70% of the candidates that were coming through our process were from equity deserving communities. And we recognize that as essentially a consultant, when you're in recruitment and executive search, like at the end of the contract, you might have a guarantee and whatnot, but you're not involved in the organization much anymore. And what we recognize is we need to take some onus and responsibility for how somebody is treated and supported once they're through the door and whatnot. So we started to work with organizations on workshops, and we realized that we could branch out from there and really at scale do some e-learning offerings that would allow for us to work with organizations like the federal government or the provincial government here in Nova Scotia or major employers that are, you know, 1,000+ employees, sometimes hard to get in a room for a workshop. So essentially, we're looking to have as much impact as we possibly can. I mean, we're structured as a social enterprise as well. So we reinvest the majority of our profits back into community. We're proud to be from Atlantic Canada. We're proud to live here in Atlantic Canada. We're proud to be Canadian and all of the learning journey that entails.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think that's when you consider sort of like you say, I remember early in my career, like in my 20s, when I used to get real jobs before I became an entrepreneur, you know, I had gone through some recruitment agencies in the past, and there certainly was a traditional format in the way in which it worked. Once you were placed, there was sort of that disconnect. I love the approach that you're taking. And I'm also, I mean, in some ways, and I'm sure other folks would see that as a little shocked even at the data of that 70% point that you made. So tell me about, you know, as you're leading, and I guess you're really leading from a multitude of perspectives here. You're leading a team, right? You're co-leading a team.
Oh, right. You asked me what I did and I didn't answer that question.
Well, that is exactly right. Yes.
But no, what keep going because I feel like you might answer your own question.
I'm leading into that, but there's sort of two parts to it. So answer the question of what it is specifically you do within your organization, because I think you're right. We answered the question of what your organization does. But also talk to me about, you know, the fact that you are a leader in terms of your clients, your stakeholders, the community, and the people you actually lead. What's been that defining, you know, I sometimes call them catalytic moment that changed the way that you show up as a leader. So who are you in the organization? And then maybe what's that defining catalytic moment that changed the way that you show up? Because I feel like we all have at least had one, if not multiple.
That's a big assumption to that part too, assuming that there's a catalyst somewhere. So what do I do within the organization? I try my best to keep up with my incredible team, to be quite frank with you. So I lead our team leads on a regular basis, you know, just from a leadership perspective, run the organization from being able to kind of, you know, build out the strategy from a financials perspective to an impact perspective. I dabble in delivery still for some of the executive searches that we work on. And I do increasingly a lot more kind of people want to hear what we have to say, because some of what we say is very grounding and validating. And some of it is new for some folks in some organizations, no matter where you are in your journey of figuring out who you are as an organization or uncovering your purpose as an organization or as an individual. So that's like, I take a lot of pride and joy in that. And I think, you know, beyond that, I do quite a bit of sales and business development, but the approach that we take is very much partnership driven. So, you know, most recently we recognized, for instance, here in Nova Scotia, there was a couple different things that came up that caused for us to really want to work closely with municipalities. There's Bill 464 that came through with an amendment that required psychological safety in the workplace, amongst other things. And then there was also an act that passed called the Anti-Racism and Hate Act. And all of those things were very much applicable to municipalities as employers. And so what I did was I started partnering with municipal associations as well as municipalities themselves to be able to roll out e-learning for those organizations and look at economy of scale to be able to have an impact and what we're calling a generational impact on this province. And those are the type of things that really get me jazzed when we're talking about big picture impact. Sometimes it gets me in trouble because I don't necessarily sit super well in the details, but again, see earlier reference to my incredible team. Thank God. Thank God they do. Okay, so that's part one. And then catalytic moment, which I don't think I've ever heard that variation of the word catalyst. So that's going to stick with me. There are a few things. I mean, so back to use your language and something I say often too is back when I had a real job. So I quit my medical sales job to start a social enterprise recruitment firm with no HR background whatsoever. That was a big catalytic moment because we also had two kids at the time and I was the sole breadwinner in our family. That level of trust and intentionality that was provided to me by my wife, my partner, the mother of my kids, all of the above, was really special and spectacular. And it provided in me a belief in myself that I didn't have prior to that. So that's, you know, early on. There's midway points when you start hiring people on and leading folks. When we started to build and grow our organization, I'm an incredibly proud alum and member of the Walls McCain Institute, as I know you are. You've got my medal and my pin here. And that was a hugely catalytic moment because it allowed for me to recognize that though imposter syndrome is real, there's always opportunities to build and grow in community and to talk through some of the challenges and to do away with some of that negative self-talk and to just have an outlet. So that was a huge point for me. I will say one of the primary catalytic moments for us as an organization and as individuals. And I'm saying that because we've done it with our whole team as well. But for me, it was really spending some time with myself and going on a purpose and values retreat. It allowed for me to recognize, to get to know who I was, to deal with some, and by deal, I don't mean do away with. I just mean, you know, observe, address, and create space for past traumas, some of the baggage that we all carry. And coming out of that process, I was able to recognize that my purpose in life is to lead courageously toward love. And my values in life are authenticity, humility, and wonder. And when all else fails, which sometimes do, those are incredibly grounding forces to remember and to be guides for any decisions we need to make.
That is awesome. And kudos to you for making that sort of a choice. I've certainly done work like that for myself in the past. Can you maybe, if you're willing to, share a little bit about what that process looked like, right? You're taking yourself away to dig into who you are as a human, discover your own values. Was there a book you read that got you there? Did you Google how to do it? Like, where was this birth from? And sort of maybe share what that process looked like in case anybody else is interested in doing it themselves.
Well, okay, so it's work, but it's not rocket science, and nor is anything that we do, quite frankly. And we're just holding space for humanity, quite frankly. So our third co-founder, Lauren Sears, introduced us to an organization called Imaginal Ventures. I don't believe they're operating under that name, or I think they might have evolved into a different entity at this point. And their organizational purpose was to shift the collective consciousness of business from fear to trust to love, which is something that's always stuck with me because it's kind of moving from an old paradigm approach to a new paradigm approach. Even after the purpose and values retreat, we learned the conscious business operating system from them, like purpose-led business school, which was very important for somebody like me who did a double major in history and English and wrote his thesis on Irish street ballads in the 1700s. Didn't learn much about business in doing that. But anyway, to bring back to the retreat. So we had these incredible facilitators, and we were able to, you know, first and foremost, like, I cannot express to you how much you don't want to go. Like, how much you don't want to. The world is going to end. It's going to crash and burn if I take myself out of my business, out of my family, out of whatever it is for 3 days, 4 days. The barrier to entry, the self-imposed barrier to entry, is massive. And plowing through that barrier could not be more impactful, because you recognize that what you're doing is indulging yourself by not going to these retreats. You're indulging yourself in the noise. You're indulging yourself in what's happening. You're indulging yourself in the doing. However, if you create space for yourself to indulge yourself in the being, that's when some of the real magic can happen and some of that real intentionality can happen. So we went into the woods in the beautiful old growth Acadian forest. Here at the time it was called Windhorse Farm. Now it's called Assetulisk and run by Ulnaweg. And we went on a retreat, and there's some secret sauce to the process for sure. However, creating space for real deep thought, for real deep journaling in understanding. And when I say deep, I mean, you know, you're writing your eulogy from a different perspective kind of thing. You're seeing yourself through the eyes of others. You're trying to figure out how you see yourself through your own eyes, if you can. You're just holding space for being. And you're giving yourself an opportunity to, you know, in my case, I hold a lot of space for others to feel seen and heard. And I take a lot of pride in that. And I'm still working on trying to figure out how to do that for myself. And I think that there's a lot of similarities amongst entrepreneurs across the spectrum. And when you can hold space for yourself to feel seen and heard, to love yourself, like coming out of that, I wrote a children's book about, you know, embracing your inner child and wonder, because it was something I was called to. And it was just a very healing experience. And none of these things are final, right? When I say healing, it doesn't mean healed. Everything is a journey and everything was a spectrum. But that's the type of thing that I encourage any and all entrepreneurs to do. We've been asked to do events like that in the space that we hold ourselves as well. And it's something that we're very strongly considering because of the impact it had on us. In fact, this year, as part of some of our community reinvestment, we're not only bringing our team on a purpose and values retreat around the leader within, but we're also bringing community members from across the region to help, you know, participate, take part in that, and then bring that back to their organizations as well. That's how catalytic it was.
Wow. So I want to dig into sort of some of the data that's showing up. I mean, it's definitely North America wide, but we'll play specifically to what's happening here in Atlantic Canada. There's a lot of emerging data, and it's not new, but it's still relevant and real, that there's a lot of people that are struggling with their mental health. There's a lot of individuals who are on just the cliff of burnout, within burnout, coming out of burnout, but don't even recognize they potentially are in it, because there is this reality of being a leader, this reality of being a founder, an entrepreneur. It comes with a lot of balls in the air. It comes with a lot of weight. It comes with a lot of responsibility. There also, you can tag into that ego, and not ego in a bad way, but just, you know, the truth that I got to be strong and I got to have my stuff together. I want to kind of ask you specifically, A, what you're seeing, but then how do you personally navigate stress and chaos and uncertainty when others are looking to you to be the calm in the storm?
There's one thing you said in there that was an aha moment for me when I realized it. When you're talking about ego, that is, you know, feel like you have to have your stuff together, I think is what you said, even though you did tell me in our pre-interview that I was allowed to swear, but I'm going to follow your lead and say stuff. But I think a lot of that comes from also holding ourselves to an unattainable standard. And when you hold yourself to an unattainable standard, by very definition, it's unattainable. So you're going to be unhappy a lot more, and without joy, a lot more than you would be with. So to just piggyback off of your point, I mean, this is something that's near and dear to my heart. I had the opportunity to actually do a TEDx on that very item.
Congratulations.
This year. Thank you so much. It was a journey. And I think that journey is very relevant to this answer. So some of the data that I was able to pull up were things like, you know, 1 in 4 Canadians across the board experience extreme stress on a regular basis. That's the baseline. There's so much coming at us on a daily basis, whether it's decisions, whether we're numbing through social media, through substances, whatever that may be. It is a real issue. You know, we've normalized exhaustion to the point when we don't even know how to heal or connect or recover anymore. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, we've either felt that, or maybe there's one degree of separation from that out in the world. The world operates at a hell of a pace. And oftentimes, if it's not us holding ourselves to an unattainable standard, it's social media. It's the government saying we've got the worst GDP in North America here in Nova Scotia. Why aren't you doing more? You're like, I told you I wrote a children's book, right? And the number one question I ask, and I'd be curious to know if you get this as well, is when's the next one coming out?
Yep.
And I'm like, can we not just be happy with one?
Can, like, I rest?
Come on. Yeah. So I say that to say that it's a bit of a universal truth. It's something that we all wrestle with. It's part of the systems and structures that we live in. It's something that I think part of the systems and structures that those of us who are able to and have the capacity to should try their hardest to dismantle. The most beautiful thing that I get to do on a regular basis when I do readings of my book, I go to, whether it's at a school or at an adults event at a brewery or something, like, I'll bring a mirror with me. And I have, the book's called I Love You, I Trust You, I'm Proud of You. And I have a sticker on a mirror. And I offer folks stickers as long as they do themselves the honor of looking at themselves in the eyes and say, I love you, I trust you, I'm proud of you. That doesn't happen very often in life. And no matter what goes on in your life, you're always there for yourself, for good or for bad. So if you can hold space for yourself in that context, say, I love you, I trust you, I'm proud of you. You know, maybe you're failing at something, maybe you're not doing as much as you otherwise would like to, but you're there for yourself. It can be really, really powerful. That's something that I feel is certainly, you know, at my best works for me. And I say at my best because, again, there is no end to this journey. I spent 3 agonizing months writing, rewriting, editing, re-editing, working with peers, working with folks who have done it before on this TED Talk called The Space Between Is Calling. And it's built off of the context of the Claude Debussy quote that music is the space between the notes. And I love that because I love the concept of being able to see our lives as a series of notes. And it's those space between those major events that the real magic happens. And that's when we can hold space for grace, right? That's when we can hold space for ourselves to truly be able to tackle those events when they do come up, when those notes, when they do come up with our best selves. And I think there's a lot of beauty and wisdom in that. And 3 months later, So I did the talk, and then I was so depleted from doing that I reverted to codependent, people-pleasing tendencies. I spread myself too thin, and I had my first really significant, challenging panic attack. And I've never experienced anything like that before. It was scary. There's not even words to describe it because you're so disconnected from reality, or at least I was in that moment, that it was like an out-of-body experience, but there was no background context. It was almost just based on, you know, survival. I don't wish it upon anyone. And it was certainly, in hindsight, a very eye-opening experience. Like, I was at this is an Atlantic Canadian podcast, so many people will have driven this. I had to stop. I was driving at the time. I had to stop at the information desk. Once you get into Nova Scotia, there's like that building by the Tantramar Marshes, pulled over, staggered onto the grass, laid down, tried to kind of find myself by saying, you know, what do you feel? What do you hear? Had my eyes closed because I couldn't take in any more stimulation. And after 10 minutes, when I was finally able to put one step or one foot in front of the other, I went to go use the washroom. It was a porta potty because the information building was closed. And just walking by the building, I'm a big woo-woo guy too, by the way. So you can skip over this part if you don't like that. But I walked by the information desk and the alarm in the building went off. Like I was sending out so much like raw panicked emotion.
Yeah.
And then a whole other story is you're overstimulated and then you've got to go into a porta potty with an alarm going off blaring next to you. That's a whole other story. But the point is, you know, you asked, how do I hold myself in that way? And the only way that I know how is to do so as authentically as I can. Nobody has it figured out. There's tidbits, there's wisdom I'd get from my kids. There's wisdom I get from clients. And all I can do is try and hope that there's wisdom that I can provide to some folks on a somewhat regular basis. And that wisdom tends to come from a place of authenticity and humanity and kind of shared universal truth, because just knowing it's okay and not ignoring a problem, but seeing somebody else having navigated that is kind of the only way that I've kind of learned how to do, because I've tried to ignore it before and it doesn't work. And yeah. Therapy helps.
Yep.
Communication helps. Sleep helps. For me, as somebody who very much neurospicy, exercise is very important. And community helps. I don't know, all those things. But nobody has it all figured out. And I think, you know, giving ourselves the grace to know that we're doing the best we can is really important.
Yeah. Wow. You know, when you think about behind closed doors in, you know, whether it's in boardrooms with peers, or I mentioned earlier, some of the best opportunities and conversations happen, you know, at the side of a bar or at the corner of a networking group function. How often I hear stories similar to what you just shared. And that kind of leads me into my next question as it pertains to Atlantic Canadian organizations really taking culture to the next level. Where do you see our biggest opportunity? I certainly see, you know, from the outside looking in, and certainly I work with a lot of organizations in similar spaces, I see a lot of companies well-intended, really wanting to change the landscape, to implement wellness programs, to all of the different things that folks are bringing together. But what we're also seeing is, you know, and there's been different verbiages used over the last few years, whether it's, you know, quiet quitting, all of these different verbiages. But we're witnessing in real time, ambitious humans, people who are typically high performing, individuals that were definitely on a trajectory of growth, struggling with mental health, struggling with their own versions of imposter syndrome, struggling with purpose and not knowing how work life and home life integrate in any which way. And companies are sort of looking outwardly and going, what do we do here? And, you know, as somebody who, I respect you, I respect the work you do. I certainly respect the fact that you are extremely vulnerable and authentic, and I would think would have potentially an answer to this. But where's the best, you know, even the lowest hanging fruit, if we could think of like your branches and your orchard, the lowest hanging fruit for organizations to start shifting what was to what could be, so that we start having workspaces and workplaces that are set up differently to protect people and to empower people, and add any other word you want in there. But what do you see as the opportunity here?
There's so many different directions to go. And I know that it's probably like a 30-second answer that I could get in this space. Put your own oxygen mask on first. And what I mean by that is, if you're a business leader, take care of yourself. Because if not, you're going to burn out, or you're going to snap. You're going to forget to make that check-in call when somebody says that their parent was in the hospital. It's just not even going to be part of your world, because you're going to be operating at such a level that is just do, and you're going to lose the humanity in it. So take care of yourself first and foremost, if you're, you know, a business leader, an entrepreneur, and anybody, I should say. But secondly to that is, you know, your organization as well. Like, do what you can. What do you stand for as an organization? And what do you do? You can't be everything for all people. And you can't, to be honest with you, people talk about organizations that, well, if we make widgets, and I don't even know that I know what a widget is. So I'll just use our example as an organization. But we have tried to expand our service offerings to align with individuals, and we spread ourselves too thin. And we've recognized that we really had to hone in on what is it that we do and what can we do? What is it that we can do as employers? What is it that we can do as leaders? How can we show up for this person who may be having a hard time? What are the perks that we can provide? But also, what is the space that we can hold? And that's a really important part, because workplace wellness is not just about sick days. It's not just about gym memberships. It's about communication. It's not about having an annual performance review. It's about checking in on a biweekly basis. It's about having quarterly contributor check-ins, is what we call it, so that we can kind of navigate and re-navigate. Because if you're operating in a space where you don't know what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong, and you're trying, and then you're disappointed, and then you're quitting, and like, there's all kinds of different things that you can do that will help alleviate some of the items that you mentioned with regards to quiet quitting and whatnot. And ultimately, what all this boils down to is, if you can lead your business, if you can lead your team, if you can lead your family, you know, we're all leaders in many different aspects of our lives, but in a way that's true to who you are, and folks can feel that and resonate with that authenticity. And it really does make a difference. And I know that that can sound kind of fluffy, but I think the world needs a little bit more like okay with softness, because some of the leadership that we're seeing now is very troublesome, because it doesn't hold space for humanity. It doesn't hold space for varying perspectives. It doesn't hold space for conversation. It doesn't hold space for humanity. What it does do is it holds space for groupthink, for like-mindedness, and for fear. And that's not good for anybody. And we can see it in the world that we're living in, based on some of the stats that you mentioned earlier. It permeates through politics, it permeates through business, it permeates through life itself. So if we can hold space just in our organizations for folks to feel like they can make a difference, like they can show up as authentically as they feel comfortably doing, you know, you're moving beyond retention at that point and into the space that we like to talk about, which is moving from fit to belonging. When folks feel like you can belong, it's a really powerful thing. It recognizes, regardless of your life experience, or regardless of your ethnicity, or the community that you grew up in, which side of the tracks you grew up in, it allows for your team to show up as who they are, because you're leading by example as a leader. And that makes a difference.
Yeah, you're speaking to, you know, what I preach all the time, which is modeling. And it's sort of like, you know, being the lighthouse, if you will. And so if you can model that behavior as a leader on your own, you by nature give other people permission to also follow suit and have that space, be vulnerable, be open, be authentic, and you start to get that butterfly effect.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, because I think if you, and if anybody's even still listening to me at this point, if you follow some of the answer that was in there, there's a balancing act required. And there's a quote, and I'm going to really lean into this whole, you can swear if you want to, permission that you gave at the beginning. There's a quote that my mentor shared with me at a team function a few years ago that really stuck with me, because, you know, I'm talking about being yourself and try not to do too much. And the kind of the music between the notes, or the reading between the lines in there, is to say, try not to do too much means don't try to expand your business beyond what its capacity is. Don't spend a bunch of money and go out of business, because then that's not good for anybody. They're balancing that kind of, you know, the business mechanics with the actual humans within the businesses. It's a really important balancing act. And the way that I understand that, because I'm not very smart, with a saying that has a swear word in it, and that is, wide open hearts need big fucking fences. And I needed to hear that in a big way.
Wide open hearts need big fucking fences.
It absolutely does, or else you're going to spread yourself too thin, or else you're going to forget about the sustainability component of it. It's like, in my mind, that's not saying you cannot live with a wide open heart. Thank God, because I love that. But also, you better show up for yourself and set some big fucking fences. So, you know, in practice, what does that look like? That means kind of like what I was saying earlier, which is, don't try to do too much. Be who you are. Hold space for folks to be, you know, as authentic as they feel comfortable being, but don't try to spread yourself too thin as a business. Don't try to overreach and potentially be taken advantage of as an individual or as a business. Like, you know, make sure you understand where your boundaries are and where those big fucking fences are, because they will pay dividends. And it's a hard lesson that I had continued to learn, on an ongoing basis. But yeah, that's the saying that's always stuck with me.
That is a good one. That's like something you want on like the back of a t-shirt, right? Like you're standing in the coffee line and then somebody reads it and they're just like, yeah, I get it. And then they
should. Or you could be cheeky. You could have like wide open hearts on the front. Yeah, and then on the back, it's like ... need big fucking fences or something.
I'm looking for that t-shirt next from you. All right. So just kind of start wrapping this up because I think there is a ton of really good pieces of advice. I feel like we've really gotten to know you. What do you hope people, and I mean people, your community, your team, us, what do you hope people will remember about the way you lead?
This might sound really stupid, but I want people to feel and remember that I tried.
Mm.
Whether that's in leadership, whether that's, you know, I was telling a story recently to actually to somebody who I know you know as well, Mark Black. And so I was talking to him and I was like, man, I remember a time when I had been in a high school band and I had just come out to Atlantic Canada to come to university. And I got a booth at the Sackville, New Brunswick Christmas market. And I was like, I'm going to sell my CDs. And I made a sign that said free candy canes with the purchase of a CD. And I was out there for 3.5 hours and it was freezing cold. And I had my guitar and I had music playing, but I was like not able to play because it was so cold and I had mittens on and stuff. And I heard about it from my teammates because I was standing out there for like 3.5 hours and I sold not a CD. And that was humbling, but I tried and I was trying to find, you know, my voice. I was trying to just to do something. And just because you fail, it doesn't mean it really is. It's so cliche, but it's such an opportunity. It's such a learning opportunity, you know, because then you win the awards, then you start the business. And then you get to restart all over again with regards to, you know, whatever the most recent example of that selling CDs things was. Sometimes even just within my team, you know, you mentioned from a team leadership perspective, oftentimes I'll say, I don't know if I'm going about this the right way. I really don't. But, you know, it's the best I know how. And, you know, if you have any suggestions, kind of let's go with that. And I think that gives yourself permission to not necessarily hold an unattainable standard, but to also just recognize that there's some things that you're good at and there's some things that you're just going to try at. And if you try hard, then what else can you possibly do? I mean, you know, be smart about, you know, look at the data, like all those kinds of things. Like, I don't want to be like, if you try hard, you'll succeed. Cause that's not the case. Sometimes you won't, but I really like the opportunity to have approached life and leadership from a place of trying, from a place of positivity, from a place of wonder. Because from a place of curiosity, like I just feel like there's so much positive that can come from that. And if that can shift your little community of one, of two, of 10, of 50, of 100, then I think it's absolutely worth it.
Man, that was good. That was really good. I'm always shocked when people give me answers because you never know what's going to come out of someone's mouth, right? That was good. Listen, I am grateful to you for saying yes to being on this interview series. I have much gratitude for the fact that you live and breathe and do work here in Atlantic Canada and that you are on this path of making impact. And I wish you the most love, lots of happiness, and the most success on your future.
Can I say something?
Of course.
Terri-Ann, you're hosting this podcast and you're doing a masterful job of doing it. And in so doing, creating community and creating some of those butterfly effects. And I just want you to know, and I hope this makes it into the final cut, that the impact and the trying and the showing up and the being brave and courageous and the creating platforms for the dozens and hundreds and thousands of people to share space and thoughts in any time in history, but particularly at this time in history, is so felt and it's so needed and it's so, so appreciated. So anytime Terri-Ann Richards calls, you answer because you never know what'll come from that. And there's a lot of my answer with regards to how I hope that I am remembered that I see in you. And I just want to say that, and I appreciate you fully. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
This has been Faces of Atlantic with host Terri-Ann Richards, real conversations with the people shaping Atlantic Canada. If you liked this episode, be sure to follow, subscribe, and share it with someone who'd love these stories too.